And welcome in on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. This is the John Curley, Sherry Elder Show. John not here today, but we are pleased, very pleased, to welcome Marathon Man Jake Skorheim. This is the first of, what, 25 shifts that you're doing?
Yeah, 25 shifts, that's right. Is it? No, it's a seven. It'll be a... This sounds really gross to say for the audience, but it's 7 hours of me on the radio. I hope they like it.
That is a long time.
It's a long time.
I mean, I'm a woman, and I can talk for 7 hours, but I mean, for you, it's got to be really difficult.
As a man? Thank you. Thank you. It's harder as a man to do things. I appreciate that.
No, I mean, women have like 8 million words. Men have like 2.
Yeah. Yes.
So it is a little bit different. Anyway, glad to have you along, Jake. And this continues to be a topic of conversation, it seems like, on almost every show all the time. And that is the graffiti problem in Seattle. So Seattle has come up with a kind of a new, I guess, what would you call it? A weapon?
Future
against
weapon.
It?
Yeah, it's a futuristic cyber weapon. I don't know if it's a cyber weapon, but it is. It's very futuristic. And do you think it's going to work?
No, I don't think anything is going to work. It's a drone. It's House Bill 1989. It's a pilot program, and they'll use spray drone technology to cover existing graffiti. So they think this could be a reason, I guess, a way, I don't know, to keep up with it. Like, well, how long is it out there, and how often is it out there looking for graffiti?
Well, these are not gas-powered drones, right? I imagine that there's like they have to be recharged. It's going to take a long time. I have flown drones, like just like recreationally, the little RC drones that you can get. Mm-hmm. I'm making the hand motions for our radio audience for some reason. Mm-hmm. But I have flown these drones, and the technology is amazing, and they're really cool. They're really, really fun to fly. I have no even clue how they could be strong enough to carry paint. I don't understand this. They would have to be massive in size, and that seems kind of scary to me. I mean, like, paint is really heavy. Like, paint is really heavy. You can actually buy paint that's like different thickness and everything because it is so heavy. I don't know how they're going to go up and down the highways and spray them with drones. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, WashDOT's already spent $1.4 million trying to tackle this problem in the last 2 years. And this system that they're proposing, or that they may use, is used for pesticides usually. So they use it on crops and things like that. So I don't know, maybe is the paint very thin? And that's how it can go over it, and they do like 45 passes.
I guess, and I guess I'm confused as to how this is cheaper than just having somebody go out there and with a roller and paint like the rest of us. Like, if I'm going to go paint my house, I'm not going to hire a guy who drives a drone. I'm going to hire somebody who just goes out there with a roller. Although it will probably be a spray thing. I mean, I understand that technology. I actually painted in college. Did you know that? It was like one of those college. It wasn't a hunky painting, but whatever. I should have been in a college hunk paint. Have you seen those, like, college hunk painters?
Yeah, around here, well, we don't have painters, but we have, like, 3 guys in a truck.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a moving guy thing, you know, where they're
same,
college
same
guys.
Basic idea, same yeah. basic idea. But we would use these paint sprayers to paint the houses, and it's a super effective way, but those paint sprayers weigh 50 pounds. Just for the technology to spray the paint, and then you're hooked up. There's like a little hose that then goes into a 5 gallon bucket of paint. The 5 gallon bucket of paint weighs 50 pounds. So I don't know how they could fly these drones with all this paint. I don't think it. I don't think it exists. I actually don't believe this article. I think it's fake.
Okay, I think I'm guessing the reason that they think this is more effective is because you otherwise have a guy in a truck with a paint can that has to go out and, you know, paint this by hand, which would take far longer than a spray, you know, thing would do. But I wonder, do the drones detect the graffiti, or do they have to be programmed to go to the graffiti, or is that the dumbest question I'll ask today?
Well, my little experience with drones, I think I can say that no, I don't think the drones are detecting graffiti. Like an AI, you're talking about like an AI thing that just flies around identifying.
Yes.
Like on a infrared scanner, like there's graffiti. Yeah. No, I don't think they're doing that. I think probably what
graffiti
they're doing.
Alert.
There's some graffiti. I think probably what they're doing, drone has a weird voice, is that it is somebody driving. The thing is, like, you're trying to eliminate the person who's driving around painting. And what you're doing instead is you're replacing that person with instead a drone operator who's driving around flying these drones. because I don't think these are just going to be automatic. I don't think they're going to be just like these AI-powered drones. I don't want an AI-powered drone flying around just painting things, because what if they target me? But I think it's going to be a guy in a truck who's driving around, and he's got drones in the back, and instead of maybe a crew of three people, it's just him and his drone, and he's painting the sides of these overpasses. Certainly it would be, I guess it would be safer, because they don't have to climb up high, you know, they don't have to get on cherry pickers or ladders and stuff like that, and they could paint overpasses, you know, when there's no cars driving by, and that would be safer for the painters. I just, the technology I don't think is quite there yet.
I don't either. I think the only solution is to somehow find a surface or a paint that cannot be painted over. So that like the graffiti, it'd be like an invisible pen. Like
yes.
The graffiti doesn't stick.
Yeah. No, that'd be great. Does something like that exist? Is that a thing?
No.
No.
Only in my little head.
Well, wouldn't that be neat if they did have a paint? Like
I think
Teflon,
it would be kind of cool.
A Teflon paint that somebody can't spray over, and that they then could just spray, then they could just power wash it. And just spray it off.
Yep.
Or
that's,
rain.
That's
we live
it.
In a rainy state. So it would naturally, you know, God's rain would come down and it would wash us clean.
It's such a good idea.
Yeah, I love it. Let's invent that.
I think you've talked about this on your show, Jake. This is about the whistleblower, John Barnett. He's the guy that was a whistleblower for Boeing and mysteriously wound up dead, allegedly by suicide, the day before he was going to testify or continue to testify or do a deposition against Boeing.
Yes. Have you guys talked about this on your show much?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you think that he committed suicide, or do you find it suspicious that with the timing and the fact that he was still testifying?
I think it's very suspicious. I think it would also be suspicious that Boeing would, I don't know, be somehow implicated in this, because who would be that dumb, right? I mean, the day before he testifies, I mean, that's out of a movie. So it's very curious. But his colleagues and people that are around him, family members, say this guy was not suicidal. This is a guy who was planning to go see his mom the day he testified for a whole day. He said, look, I want to go to Louisiana and see my mom. I'll come back next week. And they said, nah, we really want to get this over with. So he said, okay, fine. Let's get it done. I'll go back to the hotel. I'll be here tomorrow morning. Then when he didn't show up, they started to look for him. They went to the hotel. They saw the police around his truck. I think a lot of this is, if the medical examiner says it's a suicide, I don't know if police will continue to investigate. They really don't have any reason to legally. But a lot can be detected, and they can discover things that don't fit with a suicide. For instance, where is the blood splatter? Where is the trajectory of the bullet? The gun was left in his hand, which usually when people commit suicide, they lose all control and the gun falls from their hand. So there's a lot that can be done to figure it out.
There's also his friend. I don't know. Did you guys play this clip? I have a clip here. This is his friend talking. She talked to ABC4 in South Carolina, and they interviewed her, and she wanted to remain anonymous because she's kind of scared that if she speaks up that something could happen to her. And she said, this was not like him. And he had a conversation with her about this very possible eventuality, which is a really weird thing to do. But listen to this.
Mm-hmm. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide.
I mean, that's a pretty specific conversation to have with your friend to say, if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. And then a few months later, you end up dead and the police are saying, you know, it's suicide.
Apparently, this is not a new thing in terms of him being harassed and bullied and I guess overall just kind of brutalized verbally and otherwise by the people at Boeing. He documented things that needed to be documented in the plants and in the, you know, I guess in the manufacturing area, and they didn't like it. And then he was subjected, according to his attorneys, to gaslighting, harassment. He was denigrated. He was humiliated. And they're going to go forward with the lawsuit in spite of him no longer being here.
Yeah. I've been following the story. And one of the interesting things about this, too, is as I have talked about it on my show at night, Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim, you guys should check the podcast out. As I have been talking about it at night, I get a lot of text messages from Boeing employees, like a lot of people working second shift and people who are listening to the show. And the reaction I have gotten has been really mixed. There's been a lot of folks that are saying, like, yes, this is really suspicious. And then a lot of other folks who are saying, this is a total conspiracy theory. Why are you spreading this propaganda around? I just have a really tough time not talking about the story. One, because, you know, it is a local company that he was whistleblowing for. Boeing has been in the news a ton. It's not all their fault. I understand a lot of the airlines that we're hearing about. I mean, a lot of the planes, the Boeing planes that are having issues that we're hearing about in the news have been delivered to, you know, Alaska Airlines, United Airlines, and their job is to maintain it once Boeing hands them over the plane. I understand all that. But still, this is a it's Boeing in the stories. That's what all the stories, that's the common thread in all these stories, the name Boeing. And it is a bummer because they're such a wonderful company here locally. I understand like how great they have been for the Northwest, how great they've just been for the aerospace industry as a whole, for the entire world. I get that. But they need to answer questions on that Alaska Airlines door plug issue. And then with this whistleblower thing, I just don't know what to make of this. The timing seems really, really confusing to me. And he doesn't sound, from what I have heard, I mean, we have more audio, but it's too long to play it. It's like 2 minutes and 44 seconds. But from what I've heard from his friend and people who knew him, this was a guy who had plans and who had things that he was trying to accomplish and do in the future. And you don't normally hear about people who have things that they're planning on doing in the very near future, like you were saying, going and visiting his mom, things like that, if they make these, you know, a decision to end his life.
What's your media prediction? Will this story just fade to black, or do you think there will be some kind of internet or otherwise sleuth, or maybe the family members will get together and hire a private investigator?
I think you're kind of right. I think it fades into obscurity if the local coroner doesn't say it's suspicious. If the local coroner just says it's a suicide, like they have, and the police have no reason to keep investigating it. Boeing is a really big company. Nobody wants to see anything bad happen to Boeing. Nobody wants to keep telling these stories about Boeing. They do a great job in all the communities that they're in. So, like, you're kind of, I don't know, like, I don't like covering all these stories about Boeing, but...
Oh.
You're laughing.
No, I'm just saying. I don't know, Art, because you're afraid or because...
No, not because I'm afraid, but because, you know, like, I do appreciate the company. I have a lot of friends who work there.
Sure.
I know a lot of people who work at Boeing. And so I want them to continue to be successful. But
right. If
weird things are happening, and I'm not saying Boeing has any connection to this at all. I'm just saying that, you know, this guy did work at Boeing, he was a whistleblower, and now he's no longer with us. If weird things are happening, I would love for them to get to the bottom of what happened. And if it is suicide, people do commit suicide all the time. And maybe he was having a really low moment, and maybe he made a decision to end his life. That's a very real possibility too.
Or this is another kind of weird angle. Maybe he wanted to throw suspicion on Boeing, and therefore he did it at an opportune time, so that would raise suspicions.
Totally, yeah. This could he might have guessed that people would say, hey, this looks weird. I mean, that's a whole different angle. That's totally possible. But we may just never know, and that is probably what ends up happening. We just never know.
We'll see. Maybe there will be an intrepid reporter like Jake Skorheim who will be out there.
I'm not a reporter. I'm a commentator.
Okay. Well, you can comment
it's
on it.
It's too much responsibility to report.
In Oregon, as most people know, they had in 2020, they had a measure that said that they decriminalized basically everything. Well, they've reversed that to some degree. And this is a new bill that says, you know, there's minor, sort of, you know, not terribly large prison sentences awaiting somebody that has a small amount of drugs. What they're trying to do is not put people in prison for this. They want to direct them first to a rehab center or wherever they will go.
Sure.
I was very cynical about that because I said, with the way most states track things, you're going to lose track of these people.
Yes.
Okay, I'll go to rehab because sobriety is not the objective. Anyway, the point is, in all of this legislation, what's come out of it is that MDMA and psilocybin.
And what is that? What is MDMA?
That's Molly.
Molly.
I think.
Oh yeah. Molly for sure.
And psilocybin.
I don't know what Molly is. What is Molly? Is that the one that makes you feel everything moves slowly?
It's the one they take at EDM festivals.
What's EDM? Could you tell me what EDM
is? Same
as
ecstasy, MDMA.
Ecstasy, MDMA.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Angel dust.
Oh, so it's not Molly?
I don't know if it's angel
What's
dust.
Molly?
No, that's another name for it.
This is where we need Joe to really school us on what all the drugs are.
How do they get Molly?
Where's Joe when you need him?
Yeah, how do they get Molly? Who's Molly?
It says it's also known as Mandy and Pingers.
Oh.
No, that's
so what?
It's known as all kinds of stuff.
This
pick
is the
name.
One, though, but this is the
basically
one that people
ecstasy.
Take at, you said, Andrew, at EDM festivals, right?
Yeah. With the music. They go, yeah, the big, you know, yeah, Unsa Unsa. Yeah. Okay. And they take those, and the, yeah, that's what it's famous for anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So they're back to your Molly. Sorry.
So essentially, these things are illegal now as well. And that's something that people are upset about because there's not a lot of regulation going on anywhere with this stuff. And they don't want people that are recreational users to have to go to a clinic or some place where they get, a rationed amount of mushrooms or whatever it is to help them with psychological problems and whatever it's being used for now. And they're saying this is a, I guess, a consequence they weren't particularly aware of when you look into the bill.
Yeah.
I don't particularly want to like advocate for Molly or Maggie. What's the other one's name?
Maddie.
Mindy.
Mindy. Molly and Mindy.
Mandy.
Some drugs are from the '50s. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not psilocybin curious. So it's
so you would
not
never
something...
you'd never be tempted to use these drugs.
Oh, I'd be tempted, but I'd be terrified because yeah. I wouldn't know what would happen to me.
I would be very worried to use them as well. I don't know what they are. I'm not a big drug person. That's not a shock to anyone. I'm not a big drug person. And I, especially now with kids, now that I have young kids, I just could never take the risk. Because I read stories all the time about people taking drugs or they recreationally like just try weed. And then it has some crazy fentanyl thing connected right. to it. And the worst of thing could possibly happen. So, yeah, I'm not going to try it.
And that would be my luck. So I'm not going to. Molly, go home. I'm not going to do that.
Good. Don't do it. Just say no, Sherry.
Hey, coming up, we're going to tackle the big O, that is Ozempic and Oprah. We'll be talking about the fact that she is quite the Ozempic evangelist right now. We're going to see whether or not that's a good thing or kind of a weird thing. It's the John Perley and Sherry Elicker show with Jake Skorheim today. We'd love to have you come along for the ride. Why don't you send us a text? You can go to the Muckleshoot Resort text line. That's 1-888-973-5476. Or if you want to check out our Instagram page, it's John and Sherry Show. Sherry is spelled S-H-A-R-I. And you can check out some of the stuff that we've got there.
Oh, Oprah that's Winfrey.
I forgot what lowbrow humor you guys had on the show.
Really? You should listen Yikes. Every day. You'll get a lot of it. Oprah's back in the news, as she often is when she wants to endorse something. Remember, back in 1988, Oprah came out and had a wagon full of animal fat. And she
I'll
lost,
never forget it.
Yeah, 67 pounds. And she was promoting something called Optifast. And Optifast was a liquid diet that was used to, I guess, help you fast and do all of that.
Was it like SlimFast? Do you remember SlimFast?
Oh, yeah, I do.
My mom used to love SlimFast, and I thought it tasted pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It was like a smoothie almost.
Yeah, like kind of a malty chocolate thing. Was it similar to that? Maybe. I don't know. Could have been.
I'm not sure, but she certainly moved on.
Yeah.
And she joined Weight Watchers on the board, bought 10% of the company, made $71 million in one day.
Wow.
On that, because the stock plummeted. Or I'm sorry, stock went up.
Plummeted, yeah.
That's not how stocks work. It's now plummeted because she's off the board, sold her shares, and she's made $221 million on this.
Wow.
So moving on to her latest weight loss, I guess.
Journey. It's her journey.
It's her journey. It's always
Sherry,
a journey.
It's about her journey.
She is now all Ozempic all the time.
And if anybody doesn't know what Ozempic is, it is just a – can you explain this? It's like this is one of many drugs that do this. It's like Wegovy is another one. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the other ones are, but it's just a weight loss drug. People just take a – is it a pill?
It's actually it's a diabetes drug, and they found –
Oh, it's a diabetes drug. That's right. But people use it for weight loss too.
They use it for weight loss, and the promise of these drugs is that at some point they might be used for addiction because – eating can be an addiction, mm-hmm. and they find that the cravings for food, alcohol, all of those things are reduced with Ozempic. They didn't know this was going to be a side effect of what it was when they developed the drug, but now that they found all of these positive things. And Oprah just had a TV special, or is having one, about this.
Yeah, now, so she's got this new thing. It's an ABC special. You can watch it on Hulu if you subscribe to the Disney bundle. It's called An Oprah Special, Shame, Blame, and the Weight Loss Revolution. Can I play you a quick clip from that? This is the teaser here for anybody who's interested.
Obesity is a complex disease.
They are the new drugs sparking the weight loss revolution.
All of a sudden, I felt like I was freed.
But there's confusion and controversy. Are the medications safe? Should children take them?
She would be 500 pounds by 16.
So I'm having a conversation with lead experts to answer our questions.
These medications are really a game changer.
Let's stop the shaming and blaming. An Oprah special. Shame, Blame, and the Weight Loss Revolution. Monday on ABC and stream on Hulu.
Can I point something out here that it is a little concerning to me? And you know, I'm not a person who has struggled with you know, weight loss or I don't have a weight loss journey that I can share with you. It's a, you know, I don't go up and down. And this has been a large part of her career, has been talking about her weight loss journey. And she said this recently. She says, all these years, I thought all of the people who never had to diet were just using their willpower and that they were for some reason stronger than me. And she went on to say, but now I realize that they weren't even thinking about food. It's not that you had the willpower. You weren't even thinking about it. You weren't obsessing about it. And I guess she has just completely changed her mind about what weight loss is and her ability to lose weight. It sounds to me, I don't know this to be true, but it sounds to me like she is saying, it's almost impossible for her to lose weight just by deciding that she's going to eat less calories or work out more or just the traditional ways we think about weight, about losing weight. She was on Weight Watchers. Like you mentioned, she owned 10% of Weight Watchers. In fact, she did a bunch of ads for Weight Watchers. She was the face of their brand. And this ad popped up. I actually found this Weight Watchers ad, and it's kind of interesting now that she's doing this all this Ozempic stuff. But she was really excited about Weight Watchers. She thought it worked great at the time.
I love bread. I love bread. I now just manage it. So I don't deny myself bread. I have bread every day. I have bread every day. That's the genius of this program. I lost 26 pounds, and I have eaten bread every single day.
I would recommend giving up the bread if you're having a weight loss issue.
I don't know that that's going to pull me into it. I love bread. Really? If you'd done chocolate cake or, you know, a big hot fudge sundae, maybe I'd think about it.
So here's my question for you, Sherry. Oprah clearly is on board with this stuff. She has now, you know, she looks pretty good. She's lost a bunch of weight. And now she's doing these specials and she's talking about it and everybody's getting very excited about Ozempic. But there are a lot of downsides to it as well. Because again, it's not FDA approved for weight loss. It is approved for treating diabetes. The weight loss is just like kind of a fun extra that they discovered along the way. Do you think it's safe for people to be using this? I mean, I know you're not a doctor, but as a doctor, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's safe for people to use this? You heard Oprah mention there, is it safe for kids? Like, when I hear those things, I think to myself, no, clearly it's not safe. People shouldn't be giving this to kids. And they should probably be thinking pretty carefully about whether or not they're going to use it for themselves until at least it gets approval from the FDA that it's okay for weight loss. And then how long can you stay on it? Like, can you stay on for just a short term and you get down to a manageable weight and then you just, like, start living your life again? Or is this something you have to take forever?
I think it's something that you have to take regularly, but Sharon Osbourne was on it and she got down to 97 pounds. And I don't think she's a particularly short woman and she had to get off of it just to gain weight.
Oh, she was losing too much weight.
Way too much weight. Yeah. So I think it can work both ways. I would not like to take a drug every day for the rest of my life and have that hanging over my head that the minute that I stop, I'm going to gain the weight back and more. And that's what they're looking at. I think if I were somebody that had an overweight child, I would definitely not do it.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's a cruel world and overweight kids are often the victim of things and it's just horrible. But I think the jury's still out on some of this.
The other thing about it, too, is, you know, you were mentioning some of the side effects. Some of the side effects of this are potential risk of thyroid tumors, cancer associated with Ozempic. Studies have said they found these in rodents when they were testing these on the rodents. Other side effects include nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, stomach pain, constipation, all these things, but people do end up looking like quite a lot thinner and maybe like closer to what they would have an ideal body image. Do you know who the comedian Stephen Fry is? Mm-mm. So Stephen Fry is a funny guy. He like, I'm probably, if you don't know who he is, I can't give you an example, but he's a comedian and he used to be a much larger comedian, but he started to take one of these weight loss drugs. I think it was Ozempic, and he lost a bunch of weight. And he said it was really, really great for the first couple of weeks because it completely stopped his desire to be eating food because he had this like, you know, he really loved to eat food and he didn't have to worry about the willpower. It also curbed his appetite for alcohol. And the first few weeks in, he was like, this is amazing. I'm going to lose so much weight. And he did. But the thing he then also discovered was the things that accompany this with the lack of, you know, drinking alcohol and the decreased desire to eat all the foods that he was originally eating. He also started having like vomiting fits where he would vomit 5 times a day, which probably contributes to, you know, some of the weight loss.
Yeah.
There's also like a bunch of diarrhea stuff. And it's like, there's all this other stuff.
You hate the diarrhea stuff?
Yeah, the diarrhea stuff makes it tough. But are you willing to, it's like, you know, it's this double-edged sword. Are you willing to trade some of the uncomfortable side effects for looking great? And if people are willing to do that, then I guess that's their choice. But is it safe in the long run? We just don't know.
I don't know. And I also think the thing with Oprah is that, you know, this weight loss stuff has been her stock and trade for a long time. And I just think she's, I mean, haven't we heard this before, Oprah? How many times are we going to hear that you've found the answer? You found the answer with OptiFast. You found the answer with Weight Watchers. Now you found the answer with Ozempic. At what point does it really stick?
I mean, it doesn't sound like ever. Doesn't sound like it ever sticks. Yeah. It's just going to be the new thing in the next couple of years, and then that's what... I just feel it's marketing. It feels like a marketing campaign to me, which makes me uncomfortable with it.
And you know, when she joined Weight Watchers, the everybody got on board because Oprah is incredibly powerful. So she's, I mean, with women, I mean, she has been for a very long time.
I bought stock when she got into it, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah, my wife, she sent me a text. She goes, did you hear what Oprah just did? She just like signed up to be the new face of Weight Watchers. We should buy stock. And we did. Yeah. And it worked out great. So thank you, Oprah.
Yep. Well,
you know, fitness guru, what's her name? Jillian Michaels.
Jillian Michaels. Yeah.
Well, she had stepped in all of this and said, this is very short lived, this way to lose weight.
Yeah.
After about a year and a half, 18 months, I said, is what she said. After 18,
there's a plateau.
Yeah, you plateau and it won't do anything more for you.
Yeah.
And you're just going to keep wasting all those, you know, dumping all this money into it. But at the same time, it takes away your muscle mass.
Oh, that's true.
And makes you, weakens your immune system. So you're going to have to fight to get all that back. You're going to gain the weight back. So this is very short-lived.
And it's expensive.
Yes.
It's really expensive.
People like Oprah can afford it, but most insurance policies won't cover it because you don't have diabetes. You're using it for unintended purposes. So, yeah, who knows?
I guess.
Why is that there?
That is Nate. Thanks so much for joining us on the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker show. We would love to hear from you. Why don't you go to the Muckleshoot Casino and Resort text line, 1-888-973-5476. Or you can check out our Instagram page, which is John and Sherry Show. Sherry spelled S-H-A-R-I. I think that I'm not trying to brag here, but I do think that the East Coast is worse for allergies than the West Coast.
Oh, man. That's quite a brag. That is quite a brag.
Today, I had a voiceover job, and I had to clear my throat like 40 times. And that is it's so bad.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, you know, and then you're reading something, and then you get kind of crackly, and then they were like, yeah, Sherry, your voice cracked on that last one. Could you do it again? And then you're trying to move away from the mic.
You're like muting your mic. Like,
There's no mute. And so, and it's allergies. It's really bad. The pollen here is really bad. And I think you're experiencing it in Washington as well.
Yeah, we're getting a ton of it. I didn't even realize how bad it was until somebody reminded me that I was also doing the same thing. They were like, you're coughing all the time. I'm like, and we're getting a ton of pollen. I thought it was too early to get all this pollen, but apparently we are. The Washington, this was, I disagree with this. I don't know how they're making this assessment, but if you want to read about pollen, which most people do in their spare time, you can head on over to mynorthwest.com, read all about pollen. There's an article though, and they talk about, I guess they spoke with the Washington State Department of Health, and they say scientists, this is a quote from them, not me, scientists have found that allergy seasons are getting longer and more severe because of human-caused climate change is the dominant driver of these longer pollen seasons. And it's now a major reason for increasing concentrations of pollen. I don't know how they're making that assessment, that it's human-caused climate change or whatever, but it is longer. It seems like we're getting pollen in the air for a lot longer. I suffer from it. Are allergies, just in general, are allergies something that you have suffered from for a long time? I say suffer. I don't know if you feel like you're suffering, but...
I just wonder when we're going to get to the point where we don't blame climate change or Trump for everything.
Or the pandemic.
Or the pandemic. Exactly.
I think this pollen is a result of the pandemic. That's what I think.
Of course it is.
Yeah, for sure.
I do suffer from allergies. When my sister was little, she had tons of allergies and had to get the allergy shot every week.
Oh, funny. I mean, it's not funny, but interesting.
I thought it was funny because she got it and I didn't. But it was really bad when we were growing up. I guess they don't do that anymore. Do your kids have allergies or you have allergies?
My kids don't have allergies. I didn't know I had allergies until just recently. My family didn't believe in allergies when we were a kid, so I didn't have them. But I do apparently have, I'm allergic to literally everything. And I'm not joking when I say that. I'm not being sarcastic or anything. I am allergic to everything. I went to the doctor. I did the test where they like, have you done that test where they stick your back full of needles?
When I was a kid, we did it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they look at your back and they go like, okay, well, you are allergic to like birch trees or something. And for my, and the way they tell that is if your skin starts to puff up, almost like you've gotten a bee sting, then they can tell. And so they looked at my back, and I think there was like 49 different things they were testing for. And they're like, oh, it looks like you're actually allergic to every single thing on this thing.
I'm surprised your back didn't blow up.
No, it did. And I was like, this is really uncomfortable. They're like, oh, it shouldn't be that bad. And it was like horrible. And I'm allergic to, I knew I was allergic to shellfish for a long time. So I've had that allergy. I'm allergic to milk. I'm allergic to all types of pollen. I'm allergic to almost every tree you might come across. I'm allergic to grass. So I just, you know, I'm like the boy in the bubble that walks around. And that's how I live my life. That's how I have to live my life.
I guess we can't invite you over because we'll have milk and shellfish.
Not for me.
And also lay out in the grass and eat it.
Yeah. I will never know the joy of laying out in the grass and eating a lobster, just like people do.
And a big glass of milk.
And washing it down.
Coming up, we got lots more show to get to. We're going to be talking about EVs. Oh, boy. Are they going to work? I mean, is this really going to be something we all will embrace? Time will tell.